Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? Yesterday we were there and now we're here. Yesterday we were full of hope and anticipation and now it's disappointment. Licking our wounds. Everybody has an opinion. That's the great thing about the Eurovision Song Contest. I love it because everybody has a really strong opinion and everybody, to a man, woman, child, thinks they know how to solve the problem. We haven't qualified out of the semi-finals for the last 5 years. You will know that. Michael Keely has been in charge of the Irish delegation for the last 10 years. You may not know that. He's coming on to talk to us before 4 o'clock. So he's the man. He's the man in charge. He's the man who decides how we select a song. He's the man who decides how we select an act. And once they are selected, he decides what they will wear, how it will be staged, all of that. So he is the man who needs to address your concerns and questions. And he will be talking to us before 4 o'clock. Difficult enough for him because it's a disappointing day. And it seems to me, and maybe I've got this wrong, but we as a country are more invested in Eurovision than ever. I think when you can't get your hands on something and it, you know, eludes you, then you want it more. You know, it's that thing that you can't have that somebody else has, you want it more. And we had it for so long, 7 wins. And now we haven't in a long time. And now we're sort of, let's be honest, lads, we're bottom of the class. From the top of the class to bottom of the class. And that's particularly painful because we know what it's like. We hanker for those halcyon days. We were getting bored with it. Mary Kennedy joked, welcome to the annual Eurovision Song Contest from Dublin. Dublin is the city that has hosted the Eurovision most of any European city. Now, the UK have hosted it more, but they divvy it out among the various cities. I think it was in Brighton 1 year, Liverpool this year, London a number of years. But Dublin is the city that has hosted the Eurovision the most. And that's testimony to our success in the competition. And it does matter, not in the great scheme of things, but we would love to be able to be, you know, inviting people around on Saturday night and getting the crisps and the cocktail sausages and the chicken wings and whatever you're having yourself and the flags and the glitter and the zogabongs and all that, you know, and cheering on an Irish act in the final, the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest. It's not to be 5 years in a row. Ryan O'Shaughnessy was the last man to do it back in 2018. And I know you've been listening to it for all of Liveline. And I know that people have some brilliant ideas. I heard some brilliant ideas there on Liveline. And I'm sure Michael Keely, the man who we will be talking to, will listen back to Liveline and take note. People were on to us because I suppose for the last while we've been the face of the Eurovision on Radio 1, whether we like it or not. So Lorcan was up late last night. Look, Ray. Even the opening is sort of resignation there. Look, Ray. I sent the same message last year regarding Eurovision. It's a waste of money and time. The Eurovision is making little of Ireland. That Croatia song was crap and it got through. Time to send an Irish song, something like the Riverdance theme. Maybe Bill Whelan could compose the music. Ray, Eurovision is now a joke. You heard loads of that sort of thing on Liveline. Gary says, whoever thought Wild Youth would qualify were kidding themselves. I have a lot of respect for the band, but We Are One is far too generic to make an impact. They would have had a better chance if they entered with a song true to their original style rather than choosing a cliche Eurovision by number song. We were talking about this yesterday. People can see through that. Our Eurovision delegation need to completely rethink their approach and consider getting a record label on board to source the song and singer. Well, they did that a few years ago. Most things that were suggested by people on Liveline have been tried, you will find. That's exactly what the BBC did last year and they finished in second place after over a decade of poor results. That's Gary. And there's loads came in and you can get involved and you can put your questions and your comments to Michael Keely, head of delegation. We will be talking to him before 4 o'clock today. Robert De Niro is a dad for the 7th time at 79. He's surprised his many fans this week by announcing that he has welcomed a 7th child in the most casual way imaginable. While on a junket for his upcoming film About My Father, there's a coincidence, the 79-year-old godfather actor began discussing what it's like to be a father himself. But when he was asked a question about being a parent to 6 children, Robert was swift to correct the journalist, explaining that he has fathered another child. I don't like that expression, fathered. It seems too perfunctory. Father, another child there. I just had a baby, he corrected her, without detailing who the mother of the child is, nor any details about the little one. 79. I wonder, will he be a hands-on dad? I wonder, will he be changing the nappies and getting up for the night feeds? What do you think? What do you think? An age is just a number. I know. But being a parent is it's energy sapping and it's demanding. Fair juice to him. 79, Robert De Niro is a dad. Owen Colfer is coming into us today. Talk about his new book. We also have Ian O'Brien. Ian is an amazing man. He's planning in the next month to climb the 27 highest points in 27 European countries. And he'll tell us why he's doing it and the challenges that face him when he comes into us. You still want to talk about it. I think we would have qualified with Johnny Rotten. We don't know. You sound like the Brits with the football. It's never coming home. The song was lame. Finland to win. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. The problem with Eurovision. See, the problem with Eurovision. I'll tell you the problem with Eurovision is, as the title suggests, it's still about the song and its performance. It's largely not, you see. It's about the spectacle, the brief show each country puts on. If the Eurovision was a radio competition, we'd have qualified for the final, a dynamic, universally meaningful song. Many of the others were dynamic jingles, and we weren't told what they were about. For example, Croatia's. Also, I thought the sound of the singers was a bit muted and cacophonous, which didn't help a song contest. I suppose, whether you like it or not, and I'm not going to get into it too much now because we're going to be talking to Michael Keeley, but it is about the package. It's the whole thing. And you have 3 minutes to be impactful, although that's probably not the truth either, because as you've heard from numerous people, there's a build-up. And now there's campaigns going on all over Europe in the months and weeks leading up to the contest where acts go around and they do radio interviews and TV interviews and they get their name out there and, more importantly, they get their song out there. So when people are sitting at home all over Europe last night, Thursday night and Saturday night, and the act comes on, they go, oh yeah, I know your man, Karaya from Finland, the cha-cha-cha. So they're not seeing him for the first time. So they know him, they know the song, they're looking forward to seeing him again and maybe introducing him to other people in the house. You know, man, you have to see this lad. You know, he's brilliant, cha-cha-cha, and he has the luminous screen, the dog collar and the da-da-da-da-da and all that. So that's the way it's gone. But anyway, we'll be talking to the statement there that Liveline got is interesting to read just from RTE's point of view. We're extremely proud of Wild Youth. They put on a brilliant performance and were fantastic representatives for Ireland at Eurovision 2023. And I'm sure it's a tough day for the lads, Dave and Ed and Callum and Connor. Approaches have varied regarding the selection process down through the years between national selections, internal selection, the late Eurosong, and details regarding the selection process for future national selections are reviewed each year. And I suppose that's the problem for some people. What are they doing this year? Is it transparent enough? All of those questions. For today, the statement goes on to say, the team are digesting the disappointment of Wild Youth not being rewarded for a great effort on stage last night in Liverpool. So that's the statement from RTE. 5 years in a row, and I know what you're saying at home. You're saying it and you're singing it. You're going, well, what's another year, huh? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yes. Johnny Logan, What's Another Year. What a great song, The Glory Days. On Robert De Niro, it's ridiculous to have a child at 79, says John. Very tough for the kid having a dad that age. How many years, as in good years, have they got together realistically? Asked John. Well, I'm sort of an older dad, you know, and I always do the maths. Not every day, but the odd time you do the maths and you go, you know, I'm this age and Tom and Kate are that age, you know, when they're 21. If they ever get married, all that sort of thing you're doing, what age will I be? What will the situation be? And I don't know if Robert De Niro thinks like that. He probably doesn't. He's probably not a bit of a thinker warrior like me. He's probably just laissez-faire. I don't know. I don't know the man from Adam. And then you get into a relationship with a woman who can have children and maybe, you know, she wants to have a child and that's the way it goes. If fathered and procreated is too perfunctory, how about sired? Is that too veterinary? Yes, that's too veterinary. I don't know what word, like, had a child, had a baby. And of course, you didn't really, because the woman has had a baby. And so what do you say? I fathered. I don't know. Any suggestions to 51551, ray@rte.ie. And now, we're looking for two contestants to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzers, three Who Done It questions on music, sport, books, politics, inventions, Anything that involves human endeavour. And like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. If you go with a clue and you get a correct answer, it's easier, so you get 1 point. And there is a prize. And it's a two-night break for two people plus dinner on one night in any one of the Ainua Collection's gorgeous four-star hotels. So you can enjoy a city stay at Dublin One Hotel, kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, check out the new spa at the Tullamore Court Hotel, relax in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, or the Fairways Dundalk, or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy, from spa treatments to afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the Ainua Collection. Ainua, I-N-U-A.ie. Ainua.ie. Here's your qualifying question today. Which brat of a bird made an appearance at last night's Eurovision semi-final? Which brat of a bird made an appearance at last night's Eurovision semi-final? 0818715925. 0818715925. And look at that, we could be talking after 4 o'clock. Yeah, we left Liverpool early this morning, but I have to say, and I've never been there before. I don't know if you have, but I was really impressed. I know it was a very brief visit. But everybody we met made us feel completely at home. And everybody from the taxi driver to the lady I met in duty free, to the people in the hotel, everybody to a man, woman, child, were lovely to us. And it struck me that there's a great atmosphere and a great welcome in Liverpool. And it's definitely a place I'm going to return to because there's so many things we didn't get to do. The Beatles Museum, and there's loads of different museums, and it's one of those cities, a bit like Dublin, where you can walk around and everything's within walking distance, so you don't have to do the taxi or the public transport thing. And it seems to be lovely restaurants and bars and all sorts of things. So it is definitely a place I will return to. And you're barely up till you're down on the old plane. They're just finished telling you that you can buy scratch cards, and then the captain comes on and he's telling you to put your safety belt on, because they're preparing to land. It's that quick. So yeah, Liverpool, I will return. Not that they care. 515 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at RTE.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I'm joined by a waterfront man, Ian O'Brien, who's gearing up for the challenge of a lifetime. Next month, Ian will set off to scale the highest points in all 27 EU countries and the UK. So that's because they're outside the EU now, in just 28 days. Why, you might ask? Well, Ian joins us to tell us why. How are you doing, Ian?
Great, thanks for having me here.
I love the name.
Yeah, like the name, I thought I was very clever, but I spend my whole time re-spelling it for people. And Google likes to think everyone's spelling it wrong. So it's clever, but maybe it's not that clever.
I love a play on words. Yeah. So your name is Ian. Yeah. You're going up the highest peaks in all these countries, and it's in Europe.
Yeah.
And you get the...
You're up, Ian.
You're up, Ian challenge. Hey! That's great. That's great. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks a million.
So this is a big one, isn't it? It starts the last day of this month, is it?
I leave Ireland on the last day of this month, but yeah. The 28 days starts on the 5th of June when I hit the top of the first mountain, which is Mont Blanc.
And is that the biggest of them all?
It's the biggest of them all, yeah.
All right.
And kind of cheekily, it's hitting Italy and France at the same time.
Oh, you're getting two countries
yeah,
in.
Two yeah, two for the price of one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it rolls on from there.
Right. Have people done this before? Is this...
Not that people have done all the mountains in Europe, so like not just the EU countries, they've done all the mountains in Europe. So there's a guy who has the Guinness World Record for visiting the top of the 50 countries in Europe, and it took him 7 months.
Right, okay.
I'm just doing the EU. Don't be away from the kids for too long.
This, I think, in finding out about you, is, excuse me, an act of defiance for you.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Because you're saying to, excuse me, I'll just take a drink of water.
It's about trying to do something. Like, there's a couple of things. It's about trying to do something before I get to a point where I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about doing something to be defined and to say I can still do this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So you're saying you're giving Parkinson's the two fingers in a
exactly,
way.
Exactly, yeah. Saying, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, yeah. Which gives you control. You feel like you have control, don't
totally, because there was a point where I didn't have control. You know, there was the early days before I was diagnosed and what I went through and et cetera. And there's early days after the diagnosis, kind of wondering what the future holds. Mm. And you kind of pull yourself together and you go, you still have a life to live, you know, I have young kids and stuff like that. So you get on with things and then you do crazy things like this.
Yeah. What age are your children?
They're 5 and 8.
Right.
Yeah. So two girls, Clara and Hazel.
Yeah. And we'll talk about them and how you told them about your Parkinson's. It's early onset Parkinson's. So you would have associated, I suppose, like most people listening, Parkinson's with older people.
Yeah, I had a granduncle that had it, not related directly to me. But so, yeah, that impression I had of someone with Parkinson's was someone sitting, shaking, old, hunched over. You know, that when you Google Parkinson's, that's the image you get, actually, when you Google it. So, and unfortunately, when I was diagnosed that day, I went home and Googled. And the first article I read was that you die within 6 to 7 years, which is rubbish.
What age were you at that stage?
It's 5 years ago, I was 38.
Right, so you're 43 now.
Just turned 38 at the time. Yeah.
So you were told that you're going to die.
Well, Google told me I was going to die. Then I realised I wasn't going to die. And I got on with things.
But the diagnosis of Parkinson's, which you know is an incurable disease still, that must have hit you between the eyes.
It did. It was a shock and a relief at the same time. The relief, knowing what I had, you know, I was like having all these symptoms, you know, anxiety, depression, movement issues, loads of different things, and not being able to put my finger on it and visiting different doctors and etc. And then eventually you get a diagnosis and it kind of goes, oh, that's what was wrong with me. And then you kind of realise, okay, now I have an incurable disease to deal with.
Yeah.
So it was a weight off my shoulders and then obviously kind of a bit of a concern as well.
So how long do you reckon you were grappling with various symptoms before the diagnosis?
Easily 5 years.
Right.
Easily 5 years. And then I always have this thing, what's Parkinson's and what's reality, you know? I can look back and go, I had a problem there. That could have been just, you know, something totally different.
Yeah.
And even now, when I get tired and fatigued, is it because I stayed up late last night or is it because of Parkinson's? You're always kind of wondering. I like to be on Parkinson's forever because it's not to get out of jail. Get out of jail card. But
But you mentioned anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
Now, again, I wouldn't associate that with Parkinson's.
Either would I. And they were my primary symptoms.
Before any of the balance or...
Before anything like that.
Right.
They were my primary, like, that's what I struggled with most. I'm a pretty outgoing kind of guy. I went into myself, wouldn't answer the phone, go to work, fall in the door, fall asleep in the hall. Just totally fatigued and the anxiety and depression just, yeah, totally went into myself. It's a different person altogether. And... You know, I eventually looking back now, I had other symptoms because they were so prevalent. I didn't even consider the other symptoms at all. I'd broken my wrist a few years prior and I had some movement issues with my right arm, but I just put it down to the time I broke my wrist of something kind of, you know, lingering effect of it.
Because I remember speaking to somebody who had been diagnosed with Parkinson's and I assumed that maybe the depression was as a result of the diagnosis. Do you see what I'm saying?
And it often is, you know, because, look, there's a chemical imbalance in your brain. That's what Parkinson's is. It's a lack of dopamine to the brain. And dopamine controls loads of things like your smell. Your smell goes when you get Parkinson's. Dopamine controls your smell. It controls your movement. It controls some parts of your mood. So there's a whole lot of chemical changes going on inside your brain. So that explains that. Obviously, some people can become, you know, a bit down after getting a huge diagnosis like that as well. So a lot of people with Parkinson's, including myself, take antidepressants to deal with it, you know.
But that wasn't your case because you've mentioned that already, that actually it was a relief to get the diagnosis.
Yeah, it was a relief because I thought I was going mad, you know.
Right. And what did you do? What was your career?
I was working in the motor trade.
Right.
And
selling cars?
Selling cars and repairing cars at a garage. So the stress of a job was really bringing it on. Like, again, falling in the door from work after a day's work, absolutely knackered and thinking I just needed to go to sleep. And at the time, like, I was really struggling. I was happiest when I was asleep. So I couldn't wait to get home and just close my eyes and go to sleep. And sleep. I always thought I just needed a good night's sleep. Get over it then and I'd be fine the next day.
And then you had a young family, probably babies in the house.
At the time, I just had a new child.
Yes,
Hazel was just born and Clara was three, so there was a lot going on, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, lack of sleep comes with the territory, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So give Robert De Niro a ring there. So that could have been it. So it is interesting, isn't it? Because there's so much going on in anybody's life that you can attribute various things.
What's reality and what's not, that's it.
Yeah, but you got the diagnosis 5 years ago.
Yeah, and things have actually got better since then.
Yeah, so you Googled it and that wasn't the first Google. Cursory Google wasn't
over
good.
That.
Okay.
Got over that shock.
So once you got over that, what happened?
I made a couple of changes to my life. I was lucky enough to be in a position that I could leave work at the time. So relieving that stress and everything was a major benefit. I started taking the recommended drugs and I started exercising.
Right.
And exercise is major benefits for your symptoms, your mood, everything.
Because, of course, they talk about the runner's high. Yeah. So you produce dopamine when you exercise,
exactly,
don't you?
Exactly. But like, you're fatigued, you've apathy, you know, so the hardest thing to do is get up off the chair for any of us. Like, not
yes,
like
yeah, no,
parent,
I know, yes.
Get up off the chair and do it,
yeah,
like, you know. Yeah. And
because somebody once said to me, the time that you least want to do it is the time you most need it.
Yeah, and if you can get out and get over that, like for going for a run, I went for a run last night and the first kilometre was terrible. I was like, I'm not able for this, I'm too tired. And you know, that voice in the back of your head telling you stop, and you get through a little barrier, but you know, after a little while and everything kind of...
And would you consider then that that's part of your treatment?
100%.
All right.
It's the best drug I take is exercise.
Right.
Definitely, without a doubt. Like when I'm exercising, I have more energy. I'm not as tired at all. So again, you're kind of thinking if you exercise, you might be more tired. It's actually the total opposite.
It is. It's counterintuitive. Yeah, yeah. 18,000 people suffer with Parkinson's in Ireland, and they're mainly over 60.
Majority are over 60. Yeah.
So do you know any of the statistics around?
They roughly make out 10 to 15% are under 60.
Right. So 1,800 to 2,000 about right.
Roughly. And again, that's under 60. So.
And does it differ in any way, the young onset Parkinson's?
Everyone with Parkinson's differs. Like, right. Your symptoms are and no one's on the same trajectory in terms of like, you know, the progression, etc. So it's very difficult to pinpoint it. So no two people with Parkinson's are the same. It tends, and I'm just generalising here, that when you get it early, it tends to progress a bit slower. You know, but other than that, everyone's just like very different.
Yeah. So the shaking thing is again the stereotypical image of Parkinson's.
I don't have the stereotypical shake. You know,
right.
I have a lot of other symptoms, etc.
But which are what?
So apathy.
Apathy.
Apathy. I know it sounds crazy, you know, but
sorry, I shouldn't laugh. But
yeah, it kills my wife, you know, I can't do that today. And you can go and climb a mountain, though, can't you?
Yeah. But that's, and what do you say to that? Because that's a fair point now, isn't it?
It is a fair point, and I don't have an answer to that, really.
Right, okay. But apathy,
apathy. Fatigue, another one that's not great. Balance, sense of smell. Your speech, believe it or not, can go. So I get speech therapy because the voice, the decibels kind of tend to drop. After
it weakens.
It weakens over time. So, you know, a lot of people ask me to repeat myself, you know. So I do speech therapy to try and counteract that. My leg, so my right side is my affected side. Most people with Parkinson's have an affected side. So my right side is my affected side. So my biggest problem is my small motor symptoms, so taking stuff out of my pocket, writing, etc.
Oh, yeah. Anything that involves dexterity.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I can do the big movements onto a mountain, walk as fast as I can. Yeah. But doing the small, stop and take something out of my bag is a nightmare.
Or empty the dishwasher.
Yeah, I can't do that. No, definitely can't do that. Tying my shoelaces is a tough one as well.
Yeah,
so things like that.
Velcro is on the cards.
Yeah, or have people around that can do it for you.
Yeah. And how are you in your head now?
I'm very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Like I'm a lot happier now than I was 5 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Again, those changes I've made to my life, just attitude and change and knowing what I'm dealing with, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's a long road. It is a degenerating disease, so I'm going to get worse. I don't tend to think about that, you know. Live life for today and get on with things and create good memories that I can, you know, when things are bad in the future, that I can look back and kind of be glad.
And that's why you're traveling 27 mountains of sorts. They're not all mountains. Some of them are just bits of hills.
Thankfully. So the idea is to get to the top of each of the European countries. So places like Holland, Denmark are quite low-lying hills.
The lowlands, that's what they're...
But others are big challenges.
Yeah.
You know,
So this came out... I love the story about why you started climbing mountains.
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier I broke my wrist. So I thought there was a problem with my wrist. So I went to a friend of mine, Brian, who's a physical therapist, to check my wrist. And he said, no, it's all fine, muscles are good. And I just kind of passed and said to him, it's like my brain tells my hand what to do and it doesn't do it. And his face changed and he didn't say it. And he just said, go back to your GP and tell him you want to see a neurologist. And I went, yeah, no hassles, I'll do that. And I did, and ended up in the neurologist's office. And I thought he was going to tell me something happened when I broke my wrist and got a nerve. And 10 minutes later, he told me about Parkinson's.
Right.
So that was fine. I went back to Brian to tell him about Parkinson's, and he went, "Genie, could have been worse. I wasn't too sure exactly what you had." It was kind of refreshing to hear. And he said, "Let's go down Clan Carntool this weekend." And I was like, "What? Are you for real?" I just got diagnosed with Parkinson's. The last thing I'm thinking about. But we did. We went down, and I got on top of Carntool, and it was kind of like, if I can get on top of Carntool, I can get on top of my diagnosis.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of message I want to spread across.
Wasn't he brilliant to do that?
Yeah, he's very good, and he's climbing Mont Blanc with me.
Yeah,
you know, he's still a very good friend of mine.
Right. So you're paying for all the accommodation yourself?
Accommodation and travel myself. Yeah. Because I want all the donations to go directly to the charity EOPD.ie.
Which EOPD stands for?
Early Onset Parkinson's Disease Ireland.
Right. And there's a lot of support for people with late onset.
Yes. And so we thought, you know, you're in a different stage of life, different things like telling your boss. A lot of people struggle with that. Telling your family. Having a family, a lot of girls, you know, having children after being diagnosed as well, and just different things, different parts of life, okay. You know, you're at a different stage of life.
You mentioned there telling your family.
Yeah.
So
I've only recently told my kids.
Right.
You know,
So Clara's eight and Hazel is five.
Yeah, I told Clara, who's eight. I haven't told Hazel yet. She's probably too young. So, it was... I thought there was no need to until now, but obviously doing this event, there's a lot of talk about it, so I thought it was time. So there's a couple of things I did. First of all, a friend of mine, Mary, wrote a poem about how to tell your children when you have Parkinson's. So I read that to her.
Yeah.
And then, when we read it, we went through a few bits and pieces, and she said, I had a few questions, and I said, you know what you do? Write down your questions, and I'll give it a week, and you can interview me. So we put a camera in front of us, and she interviewed me for 15 minutes. So kind of put her in control of asking me what it was about.
Brilliant.
You know, and it went very well.
Yeah.
And I asked her a question at the end. I said, you know, are you glad I told you? And the one thing she said was, I'm glad you told me and no one else did. And I was delighted that I had done that, like, you know.
Because she could have overheard a conversation
exactly,
or something.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What sort of questions did she ask you?
Yeah, she was, blew me away. Kids, you know, you kind of underestimate them at times. She said, how did your parents take the news? And what would you say to someone else that's just been diagnosed? And what's the best thing about Parkinson's and the worst thing about Parkinson's? So I said the best thing about Parkinson's is joking about Parkinson's because no one knows how to react. You start, you know, joking about shaking and stuff like that. You know, that's how I deal with things. I joke about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's a sort of a national pastime, isn't it?
Exactly,
we're good at that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. But no, it was good. And she's now like, she's, oh, daddy's on the radio. Oh, I've heard it all before. Do you know, it's old news now at this stage.
It sounds like a great, Clara sounds great. So Hazel is the next task, I suppose, the next.
Yeah.
That'll come in time.
Yeah, she's only five, so it'll come in time.
Yeah. So the living in the now thing, because any book you read, they'll vary on loads of things. But one thing to have in common, these self-help books, is they're all encouraging us to live in the now.
Yeah, living in the now is great if you can, you know.
Yes.
Not everyone can. Like, yeah. I'm quite lucky. I don't work anymore. So I look after the kids in the morning. Right. I bring them to school and I've got that free time to myself. So I can train for this and do all that kind of stuff. So it's not that everyone can just drop their job tomorrow and head off and do what you want. But like, I think we all wait until something, you know, in life, till something comes along, whether it's a death of someone close to us or a diagnosis of an illness, before we actually kind of go, genie, I need to do stuff and enjoy life. And a lot of these books you read, everyone's had a life experience or something, and then they go on and do something crazy or kind of, you know, live a bit of life. So if I could say anything to people, is like, live as much of your life as you can within reason.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
You know? And definitely exercise. Like, exercise helps me an awful lot. But you don't have to go climbing mountains. There's people with Parkinson's that find it hard to get out of a chair. So
didn't
get out of a chair and walk the length of the room today. That's their exercise. That's their mountain that they climb for the day.
You were saying a grand uncle had it, but he wasn't related, a blood relation. So anything I've read this morning does say that early onset Parkinson's is more likely to be hereditary. But there's nobody in your family?
No, and the majority of people I know, like, I've had the genetic test done, and they didn't identify any gene, of which there's 14. So they just say it's from the environment. And about 50% of people who've been diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease that have the genetic test done are coming back inconclusive.
It's from the environment. What in the environment?
I don't want to say anything, but like, there's talk about pesticides and stuff like that. You know,
is there? So, right, okay. Yeah. Well, they don't have
to. We blame them for a lot of things, you know. But,
So you know, that's something
in a few years' time, they'll identify something, you know. So.
Yes, yeah.
But I'd like to see prevention rather than cure. Like, there's a lot of money been spent on cure. But like, if we can get to the root of why it's actually happening, you know, it'd be much better.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a word I use that often, and it is overused, but I'll use it with regard to you, Ian. You're an inspiration. You're a real...
Thanks.
You're a strong man. So you're taking off May 31st, and then from June 5th to July 2nd, you're doing 27 climbs in 28 days, right? And what do you think is the biggest challenge there? I know Mount Blanc is obviously statistically the biggest challenge, but psychologically.
Logistics is the biggest challenge. Yeah, like mentally I'm there, right? Yeah. Okay. Physically I think I'm there. And logistics is at the hands of the gods, you know, the plane's delayed and stuff like that. So look, I will try and do it in 28 days. I've worked it out myself as best I could. If a flight's delayed and I have to go somewhere else, if it's 30 days, so be it. If it's 35 days, so be it. I'll try and do it in 28 days, but that's the challenge.
And European.
Yes.
European.
Spell it there.
I'll spell it for a second. E-U-R-U-P-I-A-N. European. Because it's Europe and he's going up mountains and his name is... Yeah, you got it. European.com. And you're hoping to raise €100,000.
The 100,000 is there, but it's more about awareness. And even just been on the show today and talking about it, that's exactly what I wanted to do, get it out there.
We're delighted to have you on. Great to hear Ian on. Parkinson's is such a tough disease with many strange symptoms. Apathy is one of the hardest ones. There's a lot of non-motor symptoms that are very hard to deal with. And I suppose that's part of it, getting that out there.
Yeah, definitely.
I wouldn't have heard the apathy thing before.
No. Yeah. Again, I thought I was lazy. Do you know what I mean? So,
well, you're not, obviously. But what you're planning to do, you're not a lazy man. Ian, lovely to meet you. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thanks a million for having me on.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
A rough night last night for our Eurovision delegation. Wild Youth failed to qualify for the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest. Ireland has not reached the final since 2018. That's 5 years. Michael Keeley is the head of the delegation and he's in Liverpool and he's on the line. Hello, Michael.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Have we done this before?
you mean had a chat on the day after... we failed to qualify for the final of Eurovision.
Yes.
It does feel like an annual Groundhog Day thing, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It does. Listen, commiserations, because I know when everybody's putting this together, nobody wants to be talking about this the day after the first semi-final, and everybody's hoping that we'd be flying the flags in the grand final. And, of course, the ultimate goal is to win the Eurovision, which we've done 7 times before. So remind us what happens on today, the day after, the night before.
What happens today?
Yeah, like what's the chats going on and all that?
Well, obviously, I mean, people are devastated. I mean, really, what happened last night was after the arena, we all got on the bus back to the hotel, and then we kind of sat around in the bar and we had a late night drink, and a lot of the family and friends of the band were over, you know. So
yeah.
So there was a lot of it's quite an emotional thing, Ray. I mean, you know, you've been here, you've been in the centre of that kind of thing. So it is like a lot of time and effort and emotional capital, I suppose, is spent on our Eurovision effort every year, and it is devastating when you know, we don't get through to the final. Like, so the guys were all geared up. They were focused on the show last night, but they had one eye on getting to the final on Saturday, and you know, when that doesn't happen, it is tough for them.
Yeah.
You know? I feel for any artist now, to be honest, who has to go through it, because it's the pressure cooker out here. You know,
it is, and it's a very public failure in a way. You know, that's it, because you're up there and you don't get through, and people are looking at you right down to the very last moment when they call out the last country.
You're very exposed.
Yes,
there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But as I said to the, I mean, I always say to the guys, and I say to anybody that takes part, I say, look, you know, you only have. I mean, people are worried about, you know, that aspect of it, and they're worried about the, you know, the potential for public failure like that. But as I say to them, I say, look, you know, you only have fans to win, because the fans that love you already are probably not going to stop loving you just because you go to Eurovision, and you know, you only have tens of thousands of fans to win all over Europe. Okay. And I think, to be honest, I think that's what Wild Youth did last night, you know, despite the fact they didn't get to the final.
I don't know if you're listening to Liveline, Michael, but they got...
I wasn't, actually. No, sorry.
They got a full show out of it, and everybody was offering up their opinions on what went wrong and how to change it.
Okay. What was the consensus? Can you tell me?
well, the spectacle wasn't big enough. Some people poo-pooed the whole competition, saying it was nothing but, you know...
I mean, either like it or you don't, I suppose.
Yeah. Then people... One guy said you should have scouts at music festivals from now. Somebody else had thrown in the towel. Somebody else was given out the fact that we hire in talent, that we don't have faith in Irish talent. One of the songwriters was Swedish, and up until the time they parted company was the another person, English or something like that. There were some guy was very well informed.
Yeah, anyway. I know that because that thing about the songwriters has. I've heard people kind of given out about that before. That's the modern world we live in. Like, people collaborate on songs across the globe. You know, people work with, you know, people from Dublin work with people from LA who work with people from Prague or Paris or Berlin. Like, that is the modern world, you know. So you can't really roll back the clock and say, you know, we're going to only have people who collaborate with other people in Ireland, you know.
The most common theme that came up was a national song contest. Most people said we have to separate the competition from the Late Late Show, and they were saying now that Ryan Tuberty is going from the Late Late Show, it's an opportunistic time to do that.
Listen, I'm as opportunistic as the next person, Ray, when it comes to this. I would agree. I mean, I think the Late Late has served it well in a way, because it has been the only vehicle of a sufficient scale that we can do, to be honest. It's very limited, you know, in terms of its scale, but it's pretty much the best thing we can do in that studio, you know. One of the things that I always say, and like, I'm not going to win any popularity contest for saying this, but like, RTÉ has been chronically underfunded, I think, it's not just my opinion, lots of people say it's for decades, and it shows particularly when it comes to us putting on entertainment shows, and in particular entertainment shows. Like, I think we make the best use of facilities, and we do news and current affairs and sport and all sorts of other shows, drama, you know, quite well and very well in lots of cases. But when it comes to entertainment, you need scale to make it look as impressive as a show that you would see in other European countries, you know. And the truth is, our facilities in RTÉ aren't sufficient to mount shows like that, you know. You've probably been to stations all over Europe the same way I have, you know, making radio shows or whatever. And you see the facilities that they have, you know. I mean, you know,
we're a smaller country. We're a smaller country.
Yeah,
yes.
but even go down to like small countries like Austria. Finland is a country, you know, of you know, similar population size, but they have much more modern studio facilities. They have
Okay, that's one there. I'm just the chats in the bar and the licking of the wounds and all of that. Was there anything said that could have been done differently? Did anybody say we should have done this or we should have done that?
No, because I think what they had a very clear vision of what they wanted to do. I mean, Conor, who was
the lead singer.
Yeah, lead singer last night. He had a very, very clear vision of what he wanted to do. He wanted, you know, that gold look. He wanted to wear the spangly gold outfit. He wanted to.
And do you have any say in that? Could you advise him one way or the other?
Of course, but I mean, it's not my job. Isn't to impose my artistic vision on them. You know, my job is just to help them realize their own artistic vision to the best of their ability and our ability, and obviously, you know, to make it work from a Eurovision point of view as well. So, I think the best thing that I can do is to help an artist realize their vision and their potential on the stage. I mean, that's what I suppose to be, not to tell people what to do or what to sing or
no,
what
but
to
you,
wear or what to, you know.
But you have so been involved in it.
I'll advise them if I think something, if I think something could be done slightly better or slightly differently or whatever. And of course, I'm there to really make sure that things like we're getting the best possible use of the cameras that are available, use of the lighting and all that kind of stuff.
But Michael, you are the head of delegation. You have been so for the last 10 years. So when it comes to an act, when it comes to a meeting, you are probably the most experienced person in the room, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, okay. But I mean, I'm not going to tell them, look, I've had a great idea, this is what you're going to do. You know what I mean? So, and because, I mean, that wouldn't be true to the artist. It wouldn't be authentic for them, and they probably wouldn't feel like they owned it to the same extent that they felt they owned it last night.
Okay.
They were, like, they kind of owned that stage last night, if you ask me, and I thought they all did an absolutely amazing job at it, you know.
Well, let's give the you know, I said you were coming on, and I said that people could address questions and comments to you. So Mary has been on. I watch Eurovision every year, but after last night, I'm finished with it. Wild Youth deserve to be in the final. How good they must be, and they were brilliant. It's a waste of time and money. Very disappointed, says Mary. People can say what they like, says Nikki. A good song will always stand up anywhere. You are playing a song that is 43 years old. I played What's Another Year by Johnny Logan. And you could play Niamh Cavan and Linda Martin, Paul Harrington and Charlie McGettigan, or any of our seven winners, and people will still know the words of the songs. Just saying, a good song can win without all the theatrics. And these are all comments. Is it not time to completely overhaul the selection process for the song we send forward for Eurovision? This is the same old conversation we've been having for the last number of years. Simply put, the song by Wild Youth was very mediocre at best. It was very dated and instantly forgettable. There is so much diversity of musical talent in this country, which is not being given an opportunity. This appears to be a closed shop situation, which is very disappointing. This is Kim. Please change the selection process for next year and open the competition to a much wider base. From a true Eurovision fan.
Can I address that one?
Yes,
in particular?
You can.
Because, like you mentioned, it's a closed shop. It's not a closed shop. We advertised for people to send in songs last September or October. I can't remember. I think it was the end of September, maybe beginning of October. That's open to anybody. Anybody who wants to send in a song. There's no. I don't go around and just limit it to you know, a certain set of artists or individuals.
Yeah.
Anybody who wants to send a song can send it in, and they are all listened to. And they're not listened to just by me. They're listened to by, you know, a panel of 30 or 40 different people. So so that one I just want to address, because I said it's not a closed shop by any means. And
Do people get confused, Michael? I know in other countries that it seems to be the same every year. I'm thinking about Sweden, and they have that brilliant competition.
Yeah.
And it's a big event. It's celebrated. There's semi-finals. You know, everybody gets behind it. It appears to me that every year I have to ask the same question. How are they selecting the song this year? What's the process? That it's not the same every year, and people get confused. And when people get confused, they think that maybe somebody's trying to pull the wool over their eyes or something like that.
All right. Okay. Well, look, I just want to reassure people. No one is trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. It's a completely transparent process. I mean, Sweden do the Melody Festival, which is, as you know, is this massive music show that starts in August or September. They start selecting acts, and it goes on for 6 or 8 weeks at the beginning of the following year, you know. So, but it's a very, very successful show, and so they've got they've hit on a formula that works for them, works very well for them. Like they've got two wins in the last 10 years. They've got the favourite going into the final on Saturday, so they're looking potentially at 3 wins in 10 years. So why would they change their approach?
Contrast that with us and the last 10 years with Ireland.
Well,
so what we've got out of the semi final how many times in the last 10 years?
Exactly, that's the point. So
how many times?
Isn't it twice out of the semi-final in the last 10 years?
Okay.
But we've tried a lot of different methods. So it would be, people would give out to us if we said we just stuck to the same method for 10 or 12 years and we only got out twice, or whatever it is. At least, you know, what we do is we look at it every year and we thought, well, is there a better way of doing it? Or could we do it slightly differently? Or could we look at, some other method of trying to pick a winner?
Yeah.
So that's the reason why we change it, is because we're trying to improve it, or at least we're trying to improve our chances.
Okay.
If we hit on a method that's going to be, that suddenly starts giving us top 10, you know, entries, then we'll obviously keep it for a while.
Do you think that it will be separated from the Late Late Show next year, the selection process?
I honestly don't know at the moment, because that's that'll be a conversation to have, obviously, with the heads in the entertainment department in RTE, and of course with the incoming Late Late Show team and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, nobody knows who's going to be in.
And you produced the last national song contest, did you? Is that, and people are calling for it. Little do they know that what was selected out of that was. Dustin.
Well, you know because you presented it.
I know. Right? No, but I was listening to Liveline today, and it was funny because the same person would say, Dustin is the reason we're not winning and we should bring back the National Song Contest, when actually Dustin was the last time we had a National Song Contest. So there you
go. And also the interesting thing about that was, that was back in 2008, and the result was selected just by a televote.
Yes.
Which was the same as last night. The results last night were purely by televote and not by jury, which I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, if we'd gotten through with just a televote last night, I would have said it's the best system in the world and they should never bring a jury back.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I don't know. Yeah, the public voted Dustin.
And when will you get the breakdown? When will we know where we were in the bottom five?
We'll probably, the EBU are, you know, publish the results on Sunday after the competition is all over. And they'll let you know what ranking you were. But to be honest, I don't really pay attention to that, because you either qualify or you don't, you know.
Yeah,
You know, after that, it's kind of irrelevant.
Somebody says, young people do not watch The Late Late. Should they be targeted more in choosing our Eurovision entry? Separate programme needs to be done solely for choosing our entry. Use Vicar Street or Whelan's or the Round Room in the Mansion House as the stage. Need to grab people's attention to get them to tune in on the night. And somebody else on Liveline said that TG Carr should get control of the Eurovision because they do a great job on the Junior Eurovision. You have to have a known performer attached to the song, and the website explicitly says you have to be experienced. It says it's not a contest for beginners. Well, we did that this year. You see, you would have thought that Wild Youth, because they have an awful lot of experience under their belts, they're seasoned performers, that we were sort of addressing that thing, but it didn't work for us.
Yeah, I mean, I say it's not a competition for beginners, because it's not an amateur competition. I think people tend to confuse it. Some people tend to still think of it as a kind of an amateur song contest or an amateur, you know, like a festival or something that you go along to, and if you're a good singer at home, you can, you know, you might do well in that. It is the most professional music competition in the world, and the biggest music competition in the world. And even standing on that stage when you're not performing in an empty arena is terrifying enough, you know, and I've done that myself. And seasoned performers like Wild Youth will tell you that nothing really can prepare you for the enormity of the Eurovision when you walk out onto that stage. And like we've had, as you know, over the years, we've been lucky enough to have people like Nicky Byrne represent us, who is no stranger to huge stages. And he said this was unlike anything. I mean, we obviously spoke about it afterwards, but he said it was unlike anything he's ever done before, because when you walk out on that stage as a band or as an individual performer, you only get 3 minutes. So it's not like you're doing a full hour and a half set where you get three or four songs to warm up, and by, you know, an hour into it, you're on fire. You've got to be on fire from the first second that you're on. So it is extraordinarily difficult. And I would think that somebody who has no experience of being on a stage would find that practically impossible.
I felt for Conor last night watching, because you could see that in his eyes. And we were just discussing it, and everybody has an opinion, Michael. But if you're coming out to something like Finland's hard-hitting 142 beats per minute... Well, that's not it. That's Chechnya. Sorry, it's this one here, isn't it? That it's easier to get into it, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? And that's... But, and there's Finland. That's the one. It's everybody's favourite. He jumped out of the box and out of the TV, and it was just so impactful and so energetic. Yeah. And by comparison, you have... There is a contrast there, isn't there?
Well, but it's a song contest, so there has to be room for all types of music. If there was nothing but 15 songs at 142 beats per minute, people would get very tired of it
quickly. You do need
variety, and you do need, you know, a mix of ballads and up-tempo songs and, you know...
Okay, final question, Michael, because we're coming up to the note. So how do you feel now about your role in the competition?
Well, I know how other people feel about it. I'll say to you, Ray, like I enjoyed doing this, and I'll do it as long as RTE want me to do it, because obviously they're the ultimate employers. But All I'll say is, you know, although I'm not the most popular person on social media among some of the fans, but I always think of it as something like, a bit like, you know, if I can torture an analogy here, but a bit like a run-down train running on a poorly maintained track, and it's always late, you know. Now, is getting rid of the driver going to fix it? Or do you invest in the infrastructure to improve the actual train itself? So that would be my view of it. Okay. I mean, I don't know if that's any help to you or anybody, but look, bottom line is I still enjoy doing it, and okay, I'll do it as long as RTE want me to.
And Michael, we appreciate the fact that it's a tough day for you today and you took time out to talk to us, so thank you for that. And will you wish the lads the best, or just pass on our best wishes to them, because they were always nice when they were in with us, and I'm sure we'll be talking to them again.
Absolutely. And they really appreciated your support on the show, Ray. Thanks. Right.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga Cot. There's no doubt about it, but every person in this country, all 5 million of us, have an opinion on the Eurovision. Dave in Dublin 15 says, what about Westlife for Eurovision, or Hozier, world famous? Well, as Michael said, we sent Nicky Byrne and that didn't work out for us. And like, there's so many questions and comments that I didn't get to, so I apologise. And a lot of people are going Irish musical identity. And we tried that with Dervish. That didn't work out either. But I think there's a new confidence in Irish music, traditional Irish music and variations thereof, with a newer people performing it that could do well in the Eurovision. Somebody mentioned Lancome, and I'm thinking about features. Like, if you have a collaboration, I don't know, Lancome featuring Shobzy or something like that. Some genius collaboration that somebody out there can cook up with a brilliant song and send something like that. Because Chechia, is it? Chechia. Like, that's traditional music with a modern bent, and that got through out of last night's semi-final, and will be in the grand final on Saturday. Anyway, there you go. I thought Michael was very honest, and we thank him for his time. The Who Done It quiz. Press the button. Thank you. I was saying that to myself. So we have two quizzers standing by, three questions each and a prize. And this week it's a two-night stay for two people plus dinner in any one of the gorgeous Ainua four-star hotels. The Dublin One Hotel, the Hibernian Hotel, Kilkenny, Tullamore Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel, the Fairways in Dundalk, Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Once you mention one, you have to mention them all. Ainua.ie, Ainua.ie. Something for everyone. Ainua.ie. Hello, Karen Mullins. How are you?
Hi, how are you, Ray? How are you?
You're in Clonmel.
Yes.
Did you watch the Eurovision?
I did. I was in and out. I was in and out watching it.
Were you disappointed?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. What are we going to do? What are we going to do to solve a problem like the Eurovision?
I don't know either.
It's above my pay grade. I was going to say it's below my pay grade. So what are you up to today?
I've just finished work, Ray. I'm actually at my friend's and just about to get the old hair done, you know.
Nice. What sort of a do are you getting done?
Oh, I'm just literally covering over the grey patches. Right. I'm a woman of a certain age.
Yeah. At least you have hair to do that with. There you go.
True.
You have to look at the positives. And how often do you have to do that?
Sure. You'd be pushing it out, Ray. You'd be pushing it out as long as you get it. Then you realise, God, it's time.
Yeah. What do you do for a living, Karen?
I work at a childcare centre. I teach
lovely.
Children in the morning, and I do collections from schools with the after school children. So all fun and games.
Brilliant, yeah. It keeps you young.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the brilliant thing about children, I think, you know, whatever's going on in your adult life, and then you go and you chat to them, and it just disappears, doesn't it? It evaporates.
Absolutely, yes. They brighten your day.
They do. Pat Malloy, how are you doing, Pat?
I'm good, Ray, and yourself?
I'm good. Do you know what time my alarm was set for this morning? I know you're probably the same because I see you're a taxi driver. 10-4, Pat. 10-4.
Oh, no, no, no. I was 20-6.
20-6. You see, well, that's every day.
I hit a bit of a lion.
I hit a bit of a lion, right. Do you do that every day around 6 o'clock?
4 days.
Four days.
Weekends, right. That time, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort
well,
of
easy. It's a theory, anyway.
And it's easier this time of the year, isn't it?
It is. It's nice. I mean, when you're getting up and it's freezing cold, it's very easy to just turn back around and say, nah, I'll take 10 minutes to wake up in 2 hours. But,
yeah.
You know, I've a long time doing it, so I'm used to it. Just then.
You're in the rhythm. Yeah.
Now you have it.
Yeah. What are you doing this evening?
I hope to go up to the local football club to see what's happening up there. I have to meet up with a couple of the committee. We've a bit of work to do.
Right.
Blessings and GA Club in Wicklow.
Are you on the committee yourself?
For many, I've a couple of roles, but I'm not. I managed to keep a couple of roles while getting off the committee, as they say.
Okay, right. Okay, but you're still heavily involved.
I'm involved with a lot, and I'm involved with the children's officer.
Great. So, what about the Eurovision? Any strong opinions or no?
Well, I tell you the truth. I was watching the soccer.
Oh yes,
but,
yes.
I did switch over, and it's, by chance, it was just when the. Yeah, Cha 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 guy was.
Oh yeah, Finland. Yeah,
Korea. I thought he was one of the young offenders from Cork. Yeah, the young offenders haircut on him anyway.
Oh yeah.
But I wouldn't. To be honest, I don't have any strong opinion. I think it's a lucky dip.
I
really do. I think we've tried lots of different things and none of them have worked.
Yeah.
But. I don't think now it'll keep me awake tonight. It didn't last night.
No, I know. See, I'm a great believer in international best practice, Pat and Karen. So you go around to all the other countries and you see what they do and how successful they've been. And you cherry pick, magpie-like, all the best bits of their selection process and you implement them here. That's what I do. Okay, Karen versus Pat, you know the deal. Three questions each. I'll give you the name of the category. You tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue, it's more difficult. If you get it right, you get 2 points. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if the drawing points, like the match last night, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck, Karen. Good luck, Pat. Here we go.
Good luck, Karen.
Thank you. Good luck, Pat.
Okay, Karen, music first. Do you want a clue or not?
No.
No, okay. So for 2 points, who is this?
I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
Well,
same name as myself, Karen Carpenter.
Oh, is it? Are you a carpenter as well? Oh no, Karen, you're just Karen. You're just Karen. Sorry. It is. Well, I'll give her that because it is the Carpenters, but Karen Carpenter was singing, so I'll give you that 2 points. Top of the world. Well done. Top of the world to you. Pat, it's music for you as well. Do you want a clue or not?
No, I'll have to skip the clues.
Okay, right. For 2 points, who is this?
To everything.
Who's that?
No. The Birds?
It is the Birds, yes. Well done.
Oh.
2 points, yes. Out of the recesses of your brain. But you get 2 points. Yeah, good start from both the Carpenters and Birds, correct. Now, second question, second category, cartoon characters, Karen.
Cartoon characters.
Yes.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
No clue.
No clue, okay. So which cartoon character is this?
Oh, Ralph. How I envy your optimism. Springfield 50 years in the future. With global warming trapping the CO2 inside our poisonous atmosphere, our superheated oceans will rise, drowning our lowlands, leaving what's left of humanity baking in deserts that once fed the world.
Who's that?
Lisa Simpson?
It is Lisa Simpson, yes. Doom and Gloom from Lisa Simpson. 2 points, well done. Pat, cartoon characters.
I'll have to go down again.
You do, yeah. Karen is leading the way on this one, isn't she? So, which cartoon character is this for 2 points?
I'm gifted. I'm just flopping over with talent. I can sing. Lucky thing for you, I was able to come along. You seem kind of helpless by yourself. Pipe down! One of those jokers that drives with his horn.
Who's that?
Oh, it's a wild guess. Was that Elton Fudd?
Who?
Okay, so it wasn't.
No.
No, it wasn't Elmer.
No, not Elmer. Daffy Duck.
Old one of them.
Daffy Duck. No, Daffy no, Duck, right. Daffy Duck from Looney Tunes. So, now...
Yeah, no worries.
Pat, you're on 2. Karen, you're on 4. So, Karen, that means that if you get anything from this final question, Pat can't catch you. Okay?
Okay.
So, it's game show hosts or quiz show hosts. What do you want to do?
Game show hosts or quiz show hosts? I think a clue.
A clue. Okay, a clue. So if you get anything from this, as I say, the quiz is yours, you're the winner today. Here's your clue. He'll give you the option of 50-50 or ask the audience. So which quiz show host is this for 1 point?
I did the first show, which worked really well, and we gave away 60 odd grand or whatever. We were very happy. And I was walking up through Wembley the next day to go up to do some interviews with journalists at lunchtime. And some bloke wound his window down the lorry and went, phone a friend. And I thought, that's gone out once in the world last night, and that's already stuck.
Oh, God.
Who's that?
Oh, I know. It's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yes. Need an answer?
Oh.
No.
Oh, God. No, I can't think. I can't think.
Do you want to phone a friend? Sorry.
I wish I
could. Chris Tarrant.
Chris Tarrant.
Yes, and Jeremy Clarkson does it now. So that makes it interesting. Now, you're still on 4.
Okay.
So you're still very much in it. Pat, you've worked out the permutations, Pat.
Yeah.
So if you go for no clue, which you're going to, and you get it right, then we are in a tiebreak situation, which is nice and dramatic, seeing as we're talking about quiz shows. So I'll have to ask you all the same. Do you want a clue?
No,
you don't.
No,
okay.
Just an easy one of it.
Yeah, well, I can't arrange that for you. So which quiz show host is this for 2 points?
Any of the 9 people in the studio here today could win up to £10,000. They don't know each other. However, if they want the prize money, they'll have to work as a team. But 8 of them will leave with nothing. As round by round, we lose the player voted the weakest link. Let's meet the team.
Who's that?
Anne Robinson.
It is Anne Robinson, yes.
Oh,
Karen, tiebreaker situation.
Don't worry, Karen, I think you'll win the tiebreaker.
Okay, we asked you both a question before we went on air. I'm going to repeat it for our listeners at home. Whoever answered closest to the correct answer is today's winner. I don't particularly like this part of it, but it's the only way we can sort it out. So here's the question we asked you before you went on air. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Ballinamore in County Leitrim to Ardmore in County Waterford? Karen, your answer was... Hello, Karen.
Sorry, 7.5 hours.
7.5 hours, yes. It's 275 kilometres. And your answer, Pat, was...
A little more, 822.
822, okay. The correct answer is, from Ballinamore to Ardmore, on a bike, 14 hours and 20 minutes. Which means, Pat, you're today's winner. Karen, sorry about that. You started off so well. We're going to send...
Oh, no, Chris Tarrant got me.
Yeah. We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup. And good luck with the hair. And lovely talking to you. Mind yourself. See you, Karen. See you.
Bye, Karen.
Thank you.
Well done, Pat.
Oh, didn't expect that.
No, well, there you go. You recovered well, and you're off to one of the many 4-star Ainua hotels, and you can go to ainua.ie. Lovely talking to you, Pat. Well done. Congratulations.
Good luck.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy
Bye.
Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Author, playwright, and hookhead... native, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for. Owen Colfer joins us in studio. How are you doing, Owen?
I'm good. You know, I'm reeling from the Eurovision, as is everyone. Well, I'm not really.
You didn't even watch it?
No, I didn't. I forgot it was on. I'm jet lagged. That's my only excuse.
I thought you would watch it because you're a music fan.
I actually really like Wild Youth. So I did think this was it. You know, we were going to go, but I heard the only winner in Eurovision from Ireland was Dustin. He was rehabilitated.
He was back on, yeah. The BBC invited him over.
I know, it's a cold day in hell. Has arrived.
I'd say the opposite. I'd say it's a thawing of relations between.
Yeah, this is like we're starting. This is the antidote to Brexit. We're being drawn back together.
So you were in the States?
I was, yeah. I was spreading the gospel of Global.
Global, which is the new graphic novel, Owen Colfer and Andrew Duncan. And we'll talk about that in a moment because I did mention you're a playwright as well.
Oh, yes.
And Holy Mary is in the Olympia.
Yeah, this is a huge deal for me. First of all, because it's my first play in the Olympia, but it's Holy Mary by myself from Breed Cash Productions with Mary Murray from Love Faith and Jess Shearn, who's a playwright who did Waiting for IKEA. So that is from the 11th to the 15th of July with matinees for rainy day people who want to get their kids something to do in the afternoons. It's a family show about two arch enemies making their first Holy Communion. So it's funny and poignant. And the point is that the first girl's dad has left home and moved in with the second girl's mother. So it's very complicated.
Tricky.
And that's something that actually happened when I was teaching, that there was two girls in the same class and the dad had literally swapped homes. And can you imagine how complicated that got? So very sad, but it did.
Very sad.
Very sad. For both girls.
Yes. Oh, it's hard to imagine because when you are that age, your parents and that little house that you live in is your world.
And you don't understand. One girl is saying, "You stole my daddy," and the other girl is saying, "I have a new daddy." And it just leads to awful complications. But
you've been Owen Colfer, you knock a bit of crack out of it.
I do, because life does knock crack out of things, especially in Ireland. But I try to be sensitive to the problems of the people involved. But I think, mostly it's laughing.
Mostly laughing. Holy Mary in the Olympia. And you can go there to find out more details about that. And there are matinees. Global, this is a coincidence because we played that brilliant Lisa Simpson.
Will we
play that again?
Yeah, I think so. It couldn't be more apt.
It sets up Global perfectly.
Oh, Ralph, how I envy your optimism. There is no Springfield 50 years in the future. With global warming trapping the CO2 inside our poisonous atmosphere, our superheated oceans will rise, drowning our lowlands, leaving what's left of humanity baking in deserts that once fed the world.
There you go. You don't need the clock at the end. Yeah. But it is, the clock is ticking, isn't it, on the planet?
You see, that really encapsulates what the kids are feeling. There's this new phenomenon called climate anxiety that children are actually really have. And when we went to America, we especially found that because kids are really worried about what is happening. All they're hearing is this global warming. But they know that phrase, but sometimes they don't really get the specifics. And if you're telling kids in 50 years' time the oceans are going to rise by 1.5 inches and they're going to be heated by 2 degrees, it doesn't sound like
much,
a whole lot. So what this book is doing is trying to tell kids what is happening today, or what is happening now. And
so it's a work of fiction and it's a graphic novel, but all of the details about how global warming is affecting the planet are true.
They are all true. I mean, we have the creation of new species of bear, the growler bear.
Tell us about that.
Well, the polar bears are up north and the grizzly bears are down south or in the mountains, and they don't really overlap because it's too warm for the polar bears and too cold for the grizzlies. But now we've got this middle area because of global warming, and the grizzlies are going further north. They're meeting the polar bears. They go for a few dates, maybe have a pizza, and before you know it, little baby bears are born. And these
growlers
are called growler bears or pizzly bears, depending on who the father is.
Yes,
but
yes.
We chose growler because pizzly sounds inherently rude and the kids would just start laughing during reading, so we said growler.
And what colour are they?
They can be white or brown or a mixture, but often they don't have the skills to survive in where they're born. So, for example, a growler bear could be born in the Arctic Circle and kind of have the skills of a grizzly bear, and they don't hunt the same way. So you have growler bears starving to death who become quite dangerous. And they're just hungry bears. They're not bad bears. And that's what we come across in this
book. Because of higher temperatures and the melting of the ice caps, that polar bears are and bears in general are getting closer to people.
Yeah, they have to because their hunting grounds are being destroyed. Like polar bears hunt on the ice and the ice is melting. So polar bears are coming into dumps. They're coming into villages. There's more polar bear attacks. There's more polar bears being shot. So it's just the natural order is all out of whack.
So your character who lives in Canada is?
Yeah, our character, she's an Inuit First Nation girl, and she wants to save the bears.
Right.
And she's kind of a little bit misguided because she decides she'll get a picture of this growler bear and maybe she can stir up enough interest to get the bear station, which is just outside town, open up again to get government money in. So she goes out to take a photo of this growler bear, and she finds one, but it's starving, and it chases her. And Andrew's the co-writer. His daughter had this story of losing her glasses, and she said, you guys never put a hero with glasses in." So we like the hero's based on Andrew's daughter.
Right, right.
And it's amazing how such a small representation can mean the world to people.
Yes.
So,
yeah, yeah. And then the other side of the planet, in the Bay of Bengal.
Yeah, we have Sammy.
Yeah.
Down there, and his island has been submerged where he used to live. So that's common down in the Bay of Bengal, but India, Bangladesh, Eritrea. So people are moving back who used to live on these islands are now moving onto the foreshore, and there's no room for them. And people who live on the foreshore are treated like migrants, even though they've just come from that island, 20 meters off the shore. So they're living there. The ocean is heated, so the fishing patterns are different. They've lost all their fishing grounds and they're struggling every day just to survive. And typhoons there's 10 times more typhoons. So they have got to survive in an atmosphere of resentment, of poverty, of depleted fishing grounds. And Sammy decides he's going to swim down to his submerged island home and get back this lucky knife that the family always had, but they lost when the island was submerged. But while he's down there, a lightning typhoon comes in, literally while he's underwater, and he has to get back to shore. And then Yuki has to get back to her village away from the growler bear. So what we've done is hide all this information inside a cracking adventure story.
Stories, yes, yes. Yeah. And you, more than most people, know the power of the story. And we even know in recent referenda that the stories, personal stories, were what really communicated the message.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe that's what we need to do with climate change more.
Well, I think
more stuff like this, more books like this.
Well, I really hope so. I mean, that was our idea, because there's a lot of stuff for kids, it's all very doom and gloom and it's all very scientific. And that's great. But sometimes kids want to connect viscerally to something and care about. So we're hoping, we made these two characters really amazing and cool and nice and friendly. And we hope all the kids kind of fall in love with them and they want them to survive. And then when you get to the end of the story, you can flick it open and see, this is what I can do. Because sometimes it can be very overwhelming. And there's really simple things that you can, and everyone can do every day if they want to help out.
And the illustrations by Giovanni Regano.
Yeah, Giovanni is over there in Lake Como. Poor fellow, we always say he drew this short straw living in Lake Como. So Andrew's been over several times. I haven't been over yet, but
the illustrations are beautiful.
Andrew. We found Gio working for Disney in Milan, and we tempted him to the dark side.
Of graphic novels,
but he's absolutely amazing, and we're lucky to have him.
Is this a growing genre, graphic novels, for this age group?
It's exploded completely.
Because they're different than, say, Dog Man and that Captain Underpants.
But technically it's like the next. The graphic novels used to be seen as a gateway book. You would maybe read a graphic novel before you were ready for a book. And it still is that. And it's still less, it's still less of a challenge for some people. But now they've become much more mainstream. And you see graphic novels in libraries and school libraries all over the world. So,
So we've about a minute left. So in your tour of America promoting Global, and people were asking, the children were asking you questions as if you were an expert on global warming.
I know.
I would imagine, yes.
The way you say that, right?
A man with a grey hair and a beard comes into a room and they assume, don't they? But so what questions are they?
I'm either an expert or Santa Claus. That's the presumptions. But they were. I used to say, I would always say, Andrew, why don't you take that one? If it was because I tend to just forget everything.
What were the main topic that they wanted to talk about?
Well, the main topic is always, how high is the ocean going to go?
Yeah.
And if they live in a mountain, they're not that worried about it. But so it was hard. We would have to tell them that it's not just the inch. That's not what makes a difference. It's the heat of the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Then again, 1 degree doesn't seem like a lot. So that's why we had to put it
in a book. Yeah. So Global, brilliantly illustrated, and obviously a cracking story. But on top of all that, you get an introduction to global warming in a very accessible way.
Yeah.
Owen, thanks so much for coming in. We always run out of time with you.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty, maybe we should just call you and have the chat.
Well, I've been sitting outside on the sofa since I got the date wrong last time. I came in a day early, if you remember.
Yeah. Owen Colfer and Global is the book. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.